production. From The Monthly and Listener, it's The Politics. I'm Rachel Withers, and today, the Cabinet of Scott's Grandiosity. The Trumpian revelations just keep coming. After learning on the weekend that former Prime Minister Scott Morrison secretly swore himself into administration of the health and finance portfolios, and then over matters of resources, we have today learnt that he was appointed by the Governor-General to oversee the entire Department of Industry, Science, Energy and Resources, with others suggesting that he took control of other portfolios in this secretive way at other points in time. Governor-General David Hurley has since confirmed his involvement, saying that the decision not to publicise the appointments was a matter for the government. Former Finance Minister Matthias Cormann claims he didn't know Morrison had been sworn in alongside him until he read it in the media, while other colleagues insist they didn't know either. Speaking this morning, Anthony Albanese, who is still seeking briefings on the extraordinary and unprecedented move, ripped into his predecessor, labelling it a tin pot activity. "This is very contrary to our Westminster system," the Prime Minister said. "It is unbecoming. It was cynical, and it was just weird." Indeed, this scandal is deeply odd, and many questions still need to be answered. Why was all this kept a secret? Why are we learning about it now? And what other secret portfolios did multi-minister Morrison quietly hold? The reason we are finding out about this right now is on the one hand simple, with coalition-friendly Australian reporters Simon Benson and Jeff Chambers using the shock information to promote their new book. But queries now turn to who knew what and when about this very Morrison-esque secret. Benson and Chambers should disclose how long they have known about this and whether they intentionally sat on the information to save it for their book, failing to reveal it to voters before a federal election. But even if we give them the benefit of the doubt by assuming they learnt about it post-May, there remain many people who did know at the time about this massive breach of accountability norms, not least Governor-General Hurley and former Attorney-General Christian Porter, who helped orchestrate the secret plan. Porter may be gone from the parliament, but calls are now mounting for Hurley to resign, with his excuse that publicising the appointments was a matter for the government falling extremely flat. Why was this kept a secret in the first place? As with many other Morrison scandals, the cover-up may be worse than the crime, and the furtiveness is a big part of what makes this so alarming. The way that Morrison and Hunt tell it, and they are clearly involved in the Australian story, the pandemic-era appointments almost make sense as a way to ensure the executive could keep functioning if Hunt or Cormann fell ill. So why, then, keep it from the Australian people, and from Cormann himself? Morrison was known for his aversion to transparency, whether about National Cabinet confidentiality or on-water matters, about where he was holidaying or who he tried to invite to the White House. But this episode makes even less sense. At a time when the government was taking all sorts of unprecedented actions, why hide it? What could explain this other than a pathological desire for power and secrets, and the fact he intended to use this secret strategy again across other portfolios? There will no doubt be further revelations in the coming days, although it doesn't seem as if Morrison is ready to answer any questions, having declined to comment to Sky News this afternoon on either the reports themselves or what Albanese has said about him. "Haven't seen what he has said," Morrison wrote in a text message. "Since leaving the job, I haven't engaged in any day-to-day politics." Morrison clearly wasn't expecting this kind of blowback to the story. He apparently thought it would be just fine to reveal, 2 years after the fact, in a glowing book about his pandemic management, that he had given himself secret portfolios without his cabinet's knowledge, and no one would care, that we would perhaps even be approving of this power grab. Therein lies perhaps the most megalomaniacal aspect of all this. The former Prime Minister truly believed it was his God-given right to take on further powers, to hatch a secret plot, compromising the Governor-General in the process, and that there would be no consequences for him. After all, there so rarely ever were. Moving on to our good opinion of the day, NDIS Minister Bill Shorten has announced a multi-agency task force to track down organised crime groups exploiting the National Disability Insurance Scheme following a damning report into the practice. As he told ABC News, the rest of Australia despises this, and what we're going to do is make sure that the NDIS is only for the people who need it. And in today's bad opinion, former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has come out in favour of an Indigenous voice to Parliament, but he can't quite bring himself to admit that he was wrong to label it a third chamber. As he writes in The Guardian, "But what about my and others' concerns that it will inevitably become seen as a third chamber? The technical answer to this is that the proposed constitutional amendment only empowers the voice to give advice and make representations. The voice was never set to be a third chamber, with little having changed since Prime Minister Turnbull rejected it out of hand." Talking numbers, and only around 5,500 Afghan nationals have arrived in Australia on humanitarian visas in the year since Kabul fell to the Taliban, far below the 31,000 places on offer. The government has no plans to raise the cap, but is now directing extra resources towards processing the massive backlog of applications. And in today's policy, new modelling shows there is no need for international carbon credits amid a booming local market. Going against warnings, there may not be enough domestic credits available for the government's beefed-up safeguard mechanism. In today's episode of 7am, it's been 1 year since the Taliban swiftly took control of Afghanistan as the US pulled out after 20 years of war. In the days following the takeover, foreign countries rushed to evacuate diplomatic staff from Kabul. Thousands of Afghans were also airlifted out, but many, even those who worked directly with Australia and other foreign nations, remained trapped. Today, Chief Political Correspondent for the Saturday Paper, Karen Middleton, reveals the details of a deal struck in the last few weeks by the Australian government, with Afghans who worked with Australia being told to cross the border into Pakistan, undocumented. Listen to 7am Now on the Listener app. And that is The Politics for Monday, August 15. Subscribe to The Politics on the Listener app to hear new episodes as soon as they drop, and head to themonthly.com.au to subscribe to The Politics newsletter, delivered straight to your inbox every weekday afternoon. I'm Rachel Withers, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.